So some 4 or 6 or so days ago, I asked you a question. And that was about what is the experience of beauty? And we haven't talked about that yet, so I'd love to hear what you noticed. So not what is beauty, but what is the experience of beauty? Remember last century?
For me, the experience of beauty is a softening, a creating a space within, and a gentleness.
Could you hear?
I'm not used to talking. It's quite strange.
Yeah. Whose voice is that? Oh, yeah. Could you hear? Anyone else?
I experience silence, love, and joy when I see beauty.
Thank you. So since Virginie's voice got swallowed back up into the silence, if anyone wants to go into, I think we have now a sense of what silence feels like and is, not just by like talking less, but love and joy. What is that experience made of? Experientially. How do I know I feel love? How do I know I feel joy? What tells me that it's joy and not something else?
I don't know if it's only for joy, but maybe the lack of sense of time, like you're in the moment, but there is no moment before and moment after.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a whole.
Yeah. What was the introductory part? I don't know if this is
I'm
joy.
I'm not sure if it's only for joy. There's a sense of huge devotion in that moment. Maybe it's for.
Okay. If you couldn't see Anushka's hands, she was saying wholeness. She's like, whole. The hands often will say better.
I have been in moments of beauty, love, joy, a pervading mystery. Where my definition of whatever it is doesn't exist, it emerges. It has nothing to do with me.
I missed a word that I think might have been important.
It emerges.
Emergence, yeah.
All by itself.
Would you be willing to give an example, if possible, or to try? Would you be, let me ask a different way. Would you be willing to try to give an example?
I'm willing to try. But the other day I spied a kingfisher, and I was in one of those sticky trees with the red flowers, and the kingfisher's head was exactly the same color as the flowers, like exactly the same. It was beautiful. It was and mysterious, and it just was. And I didn't know why, and I didn't need to know why.
Good, thank you. So it sounds like a kind of, I think Kylie just described really well another kind of deeper meaning that's not about knowing why, or wanting to know why, needing to know why, but there's still something. And so then we say, the feeling is that it's mysterious, we have awe for this deeper meaning. And silence and not needing to know why seems like a similar description. As well as the softening in the space.
Yes, that there is a sense of wondering and a sense of knowing at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to try to give an example?
Yeah, like like an example from the last days, but like also I saw two butterflies and they were flying exactly at the same, they were synchronized, like exactly the same timing. And it was like incredible that they were like flying at exactly, two butterflies flying exactly the same pace, and like it was so also like obvious that that's the way it is, like that's the way it should, that's the way it, the laws of nature, the laws of existence or whatever, that's just the way it's supposed to be. This, like, I don't know if that example says it right, but,
A sense of rightness in it. Naturalness.
Also, I guess, like, I don't have children, but I can imagine that when like, you have children, it's also like, you know, it's, like, you have no idea what is, who is this person or what this child is going to be, but you're full of wondering, and yet you, like, you know, it's, you have so much, like, incredible love for it, no matter what it is. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Another element for me that pops in every now and then is a sense of playfulness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both in playfulness, both in myself, and when you used the example of the butterflies, it reminded me of how I delighted in the dance flight of half a dozen little birds.
Mm.
And we did a meditation by the lake, and I might have laughed out loud because of how playful they were.
Mm. Anything else about our experience of beauty?
Yeah, I feel a sense of lightness,
mm-hmm.
and like melting into the moment, like just it's complete letting go and it's connectedness to my surroundings.
Yeah. And how is it with? There's something like, so Anushka gave the example of the butterflies, and at the same time that it's a natural event that they're going at the same, like, synchronized rate, it also usually doesn't happen because their flight is usually so, seems very chaotic. And so the kind of surprise and wonder, it gets our attention, wow. The unusualness, or the unusualness of a bird whose head is the same shocking red as the flowers that are already shocking, breathtaking. So what about that openness when we've been surprised by something? And then that openness kind of happening with something that is either less surprising or less pleasant. Have you noticed, for example, not everyone feels at home here or good in nature, but as you're having time to kind of settle in and feel yourself part of this sort of animate ashram, there's enough like there are enough moments probably of beauty everywhere you go that I wonder if you notice that it starts to also leave some openness to things that you wouldn't have thought of as beautiful. That you notice a shadow, or you notice a dead stick, or you notice a dead leaf, or you notice a spider. Or the sounds, you know, the birds that you don't like and the birds that you do like. But then hearing the sounds from another space because of the openness. Have you noticed anything about that?
Yeah. And the sound of the cars, like the horns, is like, just like, oh, another sound.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not judging it.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I connected to a comment about the baby, like that no matter what it is, but
yeah,
still so much love for it.
Yeah.
So in a way it can be just anything and it's just right.
Yeah.
I learned that snoring is really beautiful.
Mm.
That I'm enjoying snoring.
Mm-hmm. Good. Could you hear? She learned that snoring is really beautiful.
I have struggled with some of the noises, sounds, rather. The reason being, I've come from a place in the last year where there was a lot of sound pollution, and I had the image during the silent retreat that there would be silence.
Mm-hmm.
And I quickly learned that what would be silent would be me,
mm-hmm,
but that life would go on around me. And so it has been, let us just say, fertile ground to reflect on that. And I think maybe today was the first time that I wasn't jolted by the sound,
mm-hmm,
of the horn, because I saw it after a few days as something that would not go away,
mm-hmm,
but that maybe this was a time and a space where I could be more present to it, knowing that I would not have to go back I'm not going back to the place of noise,
mm-hmm,
pollution.
Mm-hmm.
So for me it's been a transition,
mm-hmm,
from a sound perspective. The nature sounds are just gorgeous, because,
mm-hmm,
I haven't heard any nature sounds prior to coming here, virtually for the last year.
Mm-hmm.
But the civilization sounds were the ones I've really struggled with.
Wow.
People talking.
Horns.
I journaled, even though we were encouraged not to write. I sought expression, so I,
mm-hmm,
made a list of all the things that I really struggled with.
Mm-hmm.
That's softening as well.
Mm-hmm. So maybe this can lead into the talk that I want to give, which is called Not Getting Away with Anything. Not Getting Away with Anything. And it is the good example that I do have that's not my imagination is being a mom. And the constant being the one who needs to do what needs to be done. And it's I think this is a good way to try to express how for me being a mom has been a really good shift in my spiritual practice. Even though there's much less time for spiritual practice. Good old Chögyam Trungpa again says that as we come in touch with I would say what we are, and we've talked about this over the last days, so that underlying stream that's untouchable, curiously, so much related to the Jinshin quality of energy of today, which is Sunday, and it's so it's easy to remember on Sunday that the element is about light, and it's a non-personal energy that is also part of all of us, and it's so it's in the hands and feet, for example. Without it, we wouldn't be. And it's described as light raining down constantly all the time. So that's what we're immersed in today as our Jinshin exploration. And I was just really shocked to find that Chögyam Trungpa was talking about what we were talking about and about this untouchable place. And he calls it indestructible. You can't destroy it. Partly because it's not something that we make up or create. If anything, it creates us. But we're not going quite that far to say anything like that. But he also talks about it as having incredible brightness that's constantly radiating. So it's like a diamond. In the Tibetan tradition, they talk about Vajra, which is Sanskrit for something that's hard and has qualities like a diamond. So it's the hardest thing and really precious. And sparkles. So Trungpa says that as we let ourselves be exposed to our Vajra nature, the nature of us as indestructible and bright and precious. Not as something that we make up and try to believe in or convince ourselves about, but that we discover. And we gradually, like as Annette was saying, slowly, slowly coming in and things are starting to settle down and things are starting to feel more safe and open and more often open and more often open. So then there can be that, okay, well, this car honking sound isn't going away. So here we are with more softness. So there starts to be gradually, it can't be forced, more and more being exposed. Until he describes being totally open and exposed, to use the word that I was using. And so totally open and exposed. And that's where we want to make sure that we're not getting, that's where we would start to jump to stories. And so not jumping to stories, just exposed without story, yeah? Without paranoia that someone's going to mess with me because I'm so open or whatever. But feeling in the open and the exposed, how much intelligence is there. And in a way, protection. So totally open and exposed and not afraid to be seen. So that a meeting point occurs. And this we've been talking about also on the last retreat and on this retreat. Something makes us realize that we cannot, he puts it as, we cannot chicken out. That means we can't just sort of say, oh, never mind, I don't have the guts. I'm too afraid to do this life thing. Something makes us realize that we cannot say our life is just a rehearsal. So rehearsal is when you're practicing and preparing and learning your lines for the performance that's going to be later on. So we let there be so much sense of safety through openness, because we already tried trying to get safe by closing and it didn't work. So then we notice that openness actually has a greater safety for us, and that exposed and not afraid ends up having that, like Anushka's gesture of the wholeness. And a meeting point occurs where we actually can feel, and it's interesting then that people talk about realization and not only liberation, like getting free of something, but realization, finding out what's real. We find out that our life is real, that we're not getting ready for something later on. Something makes us realize that we cannot say our life is just a rehearsal. Something makes us realize it is real. This is the kind of moment like Annette described, where the sound is there and we have the honesty to notice our reaction to it and we're not pushing anything. And then something says, well, the sound isn't going away. And it looks like I'm also not going away. And here we are. And so he describes then that it's not just seeing things really precisely and clearly, which is the main quality, other than being indestructible, so I was saying untouchable, this underlying stream that I talked about more as grace a couple days ago. This underlying stream that is deeply what we are. As we melt into that, and the meeting with the world and the inner deliciously happens. It's not like a spacing out and covering over the difficulties, but complete clarity. Uncompromising, we say in English, uncompromising clarity. Like there's not a chance to argue our way out of something. And what then happens is, not only do I see the world so clearly and do I see reality so clearly, but the world also sees me with the same utter precision. And there are a lot of the qualities that we mentioned, like joy, and I think that we partly described without saying the words, but I'm curious, it's interesting that we didn't quite say these words. We're talking about what he calls like a huge richness. So not just bright and open and soft, but in that melting and having real contact with this indestructible brightness and clarity, not needing to cover anything over to get on with things or to get over something or to survive. But he says this unconditional clarity is, he uses the word ostentatious. It's like showing off how rich it is. It's not hiding how rich it is. Ostentatious usually is when someone didn't have money and then they do have money and they want everyone to know that they have it. And so it's the latest car, etc. So it's not just all these nice spiritual words like bright and clear and radiant and even joyful we can handle and let it be spiritual as a new phase. 21st century after all. But he uses, they're difficult English words, so maybe we can also find the words in other languages to make it more, click better, but ostentatious, opulent. Again, it would be like a palace would be opulent. It's just, it's completely overdone with how richly decorated it is. How opulent. I don't know if it's related. I always connect it to the stone that's called an opal that has all the colors in it. But I don't know at all if it's related. So sometimes we've talked about feeling how often we come from the place of not enough. And then we do try to get away with things. So even in our meditation practice, even when the practice is about like not doing so much, just doing something, being really simple and direct, But won't we so often be trying to get away with something? Like, we'll be trying to get away with doing as much as possible that won't be too much. Or we'll be trying to get away with not doing anything, but not in a kind of honest way, as an avoidance. I notice, for example, with art, or you might notice even on retreat, taking notes, or even walking, almost anything that we do, two kind of different modes, where one mode would be, I'm trying to get away with, for example, doing as much as I can, so stopping before it gets too much, as one mode that's coming from lack and like filling the space. And another mode that's more resting and melted into this richness, enjoying the joy of that, etc. And feeling how naturally one just can do only what is needed and not more. Not by holding back from wanting to do more. Yeah? Can you feel the difference? One is this really graceful, it doesn't enter my mind to do more, because that's so, it has that complete. But it tends to be pretty minimalistic most of the time. It tends to be more like the little that's necessary. There's a story that some of you certainly would have heard, but I think it's a great story and good enough to hear again, about Aikido, and it also says a lot about Jinshin Jutsu and the way that I'm offering that here. As much as possible, trying to help you come from where it's already in your bones and in your skin and in your system and in your deep knowing and in your deep stream, and what's that one gesture of the day that has that sense of rightness or naturalness, things in place. That's definitely, there's not a question about it being enough or not enough. It certainly is enough, but it's more like rich. Maybe before the Aikido story, I think here, even though maybe we can sense that this ecosystem is not how it was a few hundred years ago, but it is that much more vibrant than the next town. Yeah? And that much more complete, and just in every little niche, so many creatures. And us, some of us being here the whole month, but the fact that there's some stream of us, even if you weren't here, that's been here a month now, almost. In some ways, that's different from most people's normal lives. We have come into the ecosystem more. And so we may have the chance to feel an ecosystem that's vibrant and full, not reduced to a kind of two-dimensional version of itself. But the many dimensions, certainly three, but there's also the night dimension and the day dimension and the in-betweens, and the by the lake, and up in the trees, etc. And to have a sense of all that goes on all the time. So much more busy than a city. But the relating of things that are going on, the non-individualistic tendency, let's say, the tendency towards experiencing the openness and the melting, the softening and the space, the wholeness. Gives us a chance to feel another stillness. Out of which almost anything can happen. So just again, remembering what we talked about last time, that sort of embryonic love or nearly love state that can come through. And the embryonic being the soft and the floating and the supported, the nourished, the wholeness. And also the potential where the cells still, any one of the cells could become any kind of cell. And then it gets a little bit more specific, and there's the three layers, and then in the one layer, those cells could become almost anything. So they could become muscle or bone or skin still. So the potential, which is partly what's been mentioned in that sense of childlike or playful quality. Jigme Trungpa talks about it as unconditional appreciation takes place with Vajra quality. There's humor, subtlety, dignity, and it's utterly, totally outrageous, he says. So just leaving room for our own experiences, simple experiences of beauty or joy, stillness and silence, for the bottom to have even greater depth, to just fall out. And so that it's not just that we are not quite sure, but we think it's spacious and clear and joyful, but that it's utterly outrageous with humor and dignity, brilliance and opulence, there's not a hiding, it's showing off its richness. So then no extra movement or gesture is called for. It doesn't even enter the picture, much less the mind. So, on a train in Japan is where we are in the story. And there's a young man who has been studying Aikido. And if I just take the tradition of one of my teachers, and well, probably could be most of my teachers, taking liberty with stories. So it was a true story, and I'm going to now tell my version of it. So it was a young guy from America, let's say, United States of, who'd gone to Japan to study martial arts, and he was studying Aikido. And he was on the subway train. And at a certain stop, a big, beefy man got on completely drunk. And belligerent is the word that comes. Like, that means wanting to make war. Like, aggressive. Loud. Which, if we think about Japan and trains in Japan, it doesn't take much, I imagine. I haven't been there, but considering how little space there is that seems to be needed per person, if someone's taking up a bit more space and being a bit loud, then that's already a lot. And this guy was taking up a lot of space and being very loud and aggressive. And the young American guy was standing and holding onto the bar, and his muscles were getting tenser and tenser as he was getting ready for action. He finally was going to have a chance to practice his Aikido, to put his Aikido into practice in a real life situation. You know, what could be more exciting? Would be like the trophy or the diploma, better than a diploma. And so he was just getting ready to jump to save everyone. And possibly because he was just about to jump and try to save everyone, this little old gentleman got up and went over to the big, angry, violent, drunk guy and started talking to him. And it wasn't too long before they were sitting together and the big, beefy guy was crying with the old gentleman, frail little gentleman, crying about the wife that he lost and how they used to drink sake in the evening on evenings like today in the garden. So this is what I wish for us and for you each with Jinshin, that you keep remembering that anything you need to know is already here in you. And by practicing the techniques that are passed down, it's just to awaken that in you so that in any situation in your real life that's not a rehearsal, that can just come through however it comes through. And not trying to get away with slipping in some technique. Yeah? Not getting away with that. Not letting it get away from you like a train that would get out of control. Really feeling into the deep wish to maybe learn what is Jinshin Jutsu or what is meditation. And not getting away with wanting to be cute with it or clever or some tricky way that I can get rid of my lack by having enough technique. By finally being good at something. So Jinshin Jutsu is a good way to start with this long journey because they say and they mean that you can't make a mistake. And so already something in us feels relaxed when we hear that. And something else feels, I can't make a mistake, so then why should I bother? It's not special, it's not important, it's not clever. Not getting away with anything in any moment. So if we can feel the richness of the moments of our lives and how each gesture is an act of Jinshin Jutsu. It's a discovery of Jinshin Jutsu. It's an act of the underlying stream coming up and through a real, in a real way, in a real life. We can start with the reassurance and by feeling safe that there's not a mistake. And then we can start to realize that there isn't a mistake. That when the notice board said, right hand on left elbow, yeah, and left hand on right ribcage, and we did something else. And we didn't realize till half an hour later that we were doing something that wasn't on the board. And then we start to realize how good it was, what we were doing. And then that thing that thinks it needs to know and be careful and send warnings starts to get the joke. And the tremendous possibility that we have as human beings. In honor of light today, on this seventh depth is what it's called, seventh depth of energy today. I want to just talk about a person who describes what I think we can practice. So when we haven't yet had some kind of full sense of safety and openness. And this wanting to close to get safe keeps coming over us. Wanting to hide and hold back and then get away with something. Not realizing that it's all out in the light of day, as if so exposed. Even the hiding is so exposed. And again, some of you definitely have heard me talk about Jacques Luceron before. Jacques Luceron. What I mostly want to say about this extraordinary person was, first of all, that he was a human being like you. And then something happened to him that didn't happen to you, which was that another boy in school ran into him and the glasses went into his eyes and he became blind at the age of 8. So something else happened to you, and this is what happened to him. And possibly because his parents kept a space of dignity, let's say, and clarity. So that the sense of life radiating constantly and uncompromising appreciation taking place could be part of their life together. So there was, Jacques doesn't remember ever hearing his parents say, oh, what bad luck, what a terrible thing. So this acceptance, even on the part of parents, so the line of Chögyam Trungpa that I was going for earlier in terms of the parenting was, to stop trying to figure out so much how we're going to do things and just realize that you have to do it. So another way to say is, like, instead of sort of trying to keep time at bay so that we have more and more time to get away with having as much time as we can to prepare and get ready to figure out how to live. How are we going to live? Like, instead of spending our lives about how am I going to live, just to realize that we have to do it. We just have to do it. And if you take the metaphor or example of a parent, unfortunately, with all the freedom we have in the Western culture, or whatever we can call it now, the post-industrial culture, dominant culture, this certain kind of freedom of individualizing our lives, I don't think we ever really have the chance to know that you don't have time to figure out how, but you do have to live. And so there's still this place that you can be a parent or see parents and get that, what it's like when there's no escape. Even when you, not only that you just don't feel like it, you can't be bothered today, you're tired, whatever, but you are completely beyond what you can handle and you have to do it. He says, have to do it. And usually in Open Dharma we talk about letting go of the shoulds with the exhale kind of thing. Relaxing the shoulders. But I recently was reading a Jewish writer talking about trying to bring back a tradition of generosity, meaning philanthropy, so specifically not just generosity in general, but generosity in terms of giving money to specific causes, including Jewish organizations, not only, but including that. So supporting the religious infrastructure and other worthy causes. And at a certain point, I mean, to me, it's sort of like, yeah, duh, obviously. In whatever, wherever you are, yeah, generosity, duh. And if no one is going to support the support structure, then it's not going to be there when we need it. So certainly also the religious, spiritual, etc., structures. But I really liked this writer, I don't remember his name, if I have time I'll post it. He said, it's not a should, it's a must. And in the Jewish kind of tradition, he said, it's a commandment, a must, not a should. So it's not something that I as an individual have to decide about. How should I do it, or can I do it, or and feeling the pressure and getting it right and showing off in that way. It's just simply built into the fabric of life. And if we don't do it, just like if we don't eat, except eating, we have some biological help to remember to do it. Whereas giving, in terms of actual generosity, especially in our present culture, we need some reminder, and so they can call it commandment or must, or we could just call it vital, as important as eating. So I like this to play with, it's not a should. It's just something that is part of life. Yeah, exactly. Because it's not a should, because it's so deeply natural, and because it comes out of nowhere, and we let it come, then it, of course, is generosity. Because it's not me being ostentatious with my wealth. It's not me showing off my money, or thinking whatever about my money, or getting away with, well, oh, this is an event on generosity, so I can give less here so I can afford that other one over there. It's not about getting away with. It's getting into that stream where not just enough, but the richness shows itself without holding back, but not in a busy way. If we notice in any strata, any dimension, any level of our experience, most subtle or most obvious, it's all about generosity. That's what's happening. And just being in deep agreement with that is so obvious as a way of doing what needs to be done. So in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, they actually put it that clearly. They say that spiritual practice is to practice the paramita of generosity, of dana. One level is about giving things on a practical, physical level, comfortable situations, gifts, whatever. The second one is the gift, the generosity of living fearlessly.
Living?
Fearlessly. And the third is, we could say, not just living fearlessly, but living Dharma, letting Dharma come through. To get the feeling of what I mean by must and not should. So if it would be a should, it wouldn't be generosity. It wouldn't be a gift, because I feel obliged to, on a psychological level, On a mental level, I feel obliged. On an emotional level, I feel obliged. This is not what we're talking about. So maybe, hopefully there's another word, but if we think of must, which makes me laugh because in the Indian subcontinent, must is being crazy with love, God love. And so you're singing must, and just like spinning around. And so exactly, must. Gradually it becomes that we realize the complete unnecessity of holding myself together, which means that I don't exist in the way that I thought.
Which means I don't exist
in? The way that I thought. The way that I've also been taught. Yeah. Yeah. So, Jacques. So an 8-year-old boy in what sounds like a wonderful family of three, two parents and himself, in Paris, in a park by a tree that he loved and could no longer see. And I just imagine the stretch in this person, this boy's being, of being still allowed to completely love life and really want to see that tree again. Like there was no shame or like, let's not talk about it, or of course, what are you talking about? Can't see the tree. But just being there by that tree where they used to go before. And what has happened is not considered a tragedy or a bad luck. But still, the fact that it's painful to want to see the tree and not see the tree is also allowed. And I just imagine that, the tremendous force that could that be created or create itself, that amount of energy in him in that one moment. And not just like spacing out to some absolutism, like, well, the experience of beauty is possible even without an object of beauty, right? Like, let's just open and soften. And but he wanted to see that tree that he loved. And he could not. That was like, this is sort of the vajra, the hardness. You want to and you cannot. Not that they necessarily talked about this, but just being in that rock bottom of that situation together, father and son, in a park, a public park. You know, it wasn't like here we can be in our little space somewhere in the forest where we can imagine no one seeing us. They probably are seeing you, but in India, it's a good rule of thumb to know. No matter how much you think you cannot be seen, you probably are being seen, literally, by human eyes. It's a little bit less emphatic here, but so I just love how he was allowed and sort of supported to be in the space where his love of life and his love of that particular tree could be fully present, however painful. But that there was nothing extra added so that could turn into the lack side, the lack mode, the getting busy mode, the getting overactive, etc., careful, and so on. It was just this tremendous love of life and a connection to a tree that was still a real tree and a real boy and a real father. Can you feel the power of that situation without adding any emotion to it, but just the power of that ground? And that this is your real life. we're not going to get into pretending, well, maybe someday, who knows, but. And then something that was really, it would almost sound magical, it does sound magical, but it was actually real. That much openness in him, and that much love of life, and let's say connection to what's also untouchable, unshakable. So with that much acceptance and that much openness, and that much connection to the real world in the ordinary sense. That he quite suddenly felt light in himself and outside of himself. He doesn't know where it came from, if it came from outside to in or from inside to out or what. But he definitely describes it as light that sounds like it was streaming. And it was streaming in him and around him so that he could see the shape of the tree again. He could see the tree with the inner light. And it wasn't like a fantasy that happened for a few moments and then passed. It was something that he learned to see with. So that's still only the context. What I really want to say about this, that I find one of the most helpful things I've learned in my life, or one of the most helpful reminders I've had in my life to keep learning from, is that when he stayed connected, he could see. He could play ball games with other kids. He could go hiking in the mountains and see things that they didn't notice and point them out. He could do lots of other things that we won't even touch on today. But the slightest disconnection, and he describes it in detail because he had a lot of time to practice, because he really cared about seeing, so that's what he was practicing, is staying connected and then he could see. One of my favorite ones is that if he wanted at all costs to be first in a game, so if you just, again, get the situation of a blind kid playing with other kids who aren't blind and wanting to be first, like most kids have that come sometimes. But when he wanted to be first at all costs, above anything else, not just, well, yeah, whatever, we'll see, we're playing. Part of the game is you don't know who's gonna win. No, I've gotta be first. Then he couldn't see. So for him, it was really quick because there was no way he could be first if he couldn't see. He had to stop running. And there's a way this is still so true for us, but we just don't have that quick and obvious of a reminder and of a stopper of our ridiculous games. And you can imagine all the other ways that we disconnect from that deep seeing being seen. That richness, that opulence, colorful, clarity, being afraid, being frustrated, etc., being angry. And he points out so clearly, he said, it's not like it's a moral code, it's not like there's this right and wrong, oh, you shouldn't be angry, you shouldn't want to be first. It's not a should, it's a must. It's not possible to live without the connection in the way that we want to be living. It's not that we shouldn't be angry and we should connect. We must. If we want to live, we must connect to living. So I love the possibility in that, that we can connect that deeply. And that we can feel how the connection makes the world, we see differently, and we're seen also, we are seen. And we get a sense of, this is my real life, not a rehearsal. I don't need to wait. I don't need to get away with something. And I especially love the precision that Jacques' story about his experience can bring out. Precisely because it isn't a should or a moral code or a rule that we're trying to be obedient to. But it's our love of life that we follow. Instead of trying to get away with getting along and keeping track of our love of life somewhere in one pocket, we're not sure which one right now. So let's end here with some silence. Feeling the gentle, unpushy dignity of each moment of our lives. May all beings be happy and at peace. May our beings participate in each moment of each day in liberation for all.